A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Real Spoilers, powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, Real Spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the War Room of the O'Keefe Think Tank, this is Real Spoilers, episode 130. The clock malfunction. They're racking up quick.
There's a reason.
Yeah. So on this episode, we will take on Steve Jobs, the movie, not the man. So that would be weird. So I guess we will begin. We will go around the table, and everyone can introduce themselves.
I'm Blake Fail.
I'm Joe Battisi.
I'm Kevin Brackett.
And I am Tom O'Keefe. So, shameless plugs, don't forget, we're available on the iTunes. You can go there, rate and review, and subscribe. We did our show shares on the last episode, and since we record these on the same day, spoiler,
inside baseball,
there's been no time for people to share them, so that's, you don't have to sit through it twice. Right. You want to hear your name again, you're still on episode 129.
Go back one.
Still there, promise.
If you're a librarian, Cynthia, you've been on them all.
You've been on a lot, so stop being so greedy.
Yeah.
So before we get into the movie, somebody had asked our thoughts on the new Star Wars trailer.
Yeah, that was Michael Lively posted to our Facebook page, and he said, I hope you guys...
Blake Lively's brother.
Yeah. He's super famous now.
Yeah.
And he does live in California.
Oh, this could be true.
He said, I hope you guys comment on the new Star Wars The Force Awakens trailer and maybe do a show on your favorite Star Wars movies a week or so before The Force Awakens comes
out. Is that droids cartoon that I hear everybody talking about?
It's the one with the Enterprise.
Yeah.
The Enterprise.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Spock.
I feel like Blake should answer this since you're
the Star Wars guy.
He is Star Wars.
Yeah. I loved it. I mean, I've watched it about a dozen times now. I'm about as hyped as can be. I've bought three different tickets to different showings. I know Dan, I think, has done the same thing.
Yeah, I think he's seen it like three times in the first day.
Yeah.
I bought three tickets to the same showing.
You're one of those guys.
I'm just going to stretch out across the seat.
Good. I'm laying down to watch it.
Mock the nerds. Yeah. That couldn't get in.
Couldn't get in, yeah.
I mean, it looks...
I bought three tickets to Alvin and the Chipmunks.
Oh, God. It's very apparent that they have more acting skill, I guess, in this one. You look like the actors look like they actually have emotions rather than like just interacting with green screen, which is a huge improvement.
Yeah.
I'm holding my judgment until I actually see the movie because it still might be terrible. You never know.
We got burned once, didn't we?
Yep.
We got burned three times.
Does everybody remember the Phantom Menace trailer and how excited everybody was over that?
Yeah.
I mean, all of the prequels had really great trailers. So
it's an amazing thing editing can do.
Yeah.
But I mean, this movie, it looks like a Star Wars movie. It feels like it's going to be a Star Wars movie. And just like, it just sends chills when you see Han Solo and he says, you know, when he talks about Jedis in the Force and he says, everything's true.
Right.
After, you know, what he says in the original trilogy. Yeah.
What I appreciate is that they don't tell us anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
They don't give away anything.
That is my favorite thing about the trailer is that I still don't know
what the movie is about.
Main story is. I know a few little beats, but they're not giving away the entire plot.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. You don't. And actually, it's kind of like Superman Batman. They don't tell you anything in either one of those trailers. Yeah. They're like, you're the characters.
Now, and my subscription lapsed, but would Bantha Tracks be revealing any of this?
they replaced Bantha Tracks with Star Wars Insiders. back in like the mid 90s.
Well, I said my subscription lapsed. Yeah. I was up front about
I know
that.
What I said.
Yeah, that's
and they had the Jawa Trader section in the back. I think that's gone.
It's how, people met each other. Yeah. Yeah. So,
if you like Jabba the Hutt.
So there's been all kinds
I'm looking for my own Princess Leia.
There's been all kinds of rumors about who's who.
Yeah.
Well, Luke Skywalker isn't on the poster.
They're
and
saying
not
that
in the
he's
trailer.
The, I've heard rumors that he's the villain.
People
that
think he
people
might be.
Are
yeah.
are absolute if they think that Luke Skywalker is Kylo Ren. It's
no, no, he's
been,
not Kylo Ren. For
no, no,
sure.
No, 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 no.
Oh,
for sure.
Yeah,
no. But no, I think
been,
he's.
It's been rumored for a while, but and also because there's like this like clip of J.J. Abrams talking about how cool it would be if
from
Luke
10 years ago, or
but
whatever. Yeah,
I will be pissed if he has fallen. The whole original trilogy
is about
how
overcoming the dark side.
Yeah, how
and
he was
his father.
Not.
Yeah.
Unlike his father, he did not make the same mistakes and did not fall to the dark side. You just basically nullify the original trilogy by making
no,
it
I,
the
and I don't think J.J.
Abrams
this, but maybe this next trilogy will be the arc about him falling and
recovering. Why he fell.
I think that is in complete contradiction to what the original story
I don't think about. I think this is all just a mind screw. I think that Luke is going to be more reclusive like in
I think
Obi-Wan.
He's going to be Obi-Wan.
He's Obi-Wan.
He's
going
to sacrifice himself to save the new heroes at some point just like Obi-Wan did for Luke. It's going
to
happen.
One of those main characters has to be a kid of someone, right? I mean, I'm thinking one of them is the child of Han Solo,
well,
Leia,
I mean, obviously,
Luke.
I mean, John Boyega looks a lot like Luke.
Right. It's true. It's true.
So, I think it's the boyish Sand blonde the deep tan
and just so
like it's too much
that's
time
my, whether
on Tatooine
maybe Kylo Ren is
well that's
Luke's
the
son
I,
and
well,
he's
see, I've heard
fallen
that
to the dark
Kylo
side.
Ren so if you know anything about the canon that no longer exists Han and Leia have twins so I've heard that Kylo Ren is the boy and the girl that we see is the girl so there could be that connection.
That could make sense. Yeah. It'll be
but,
interesting to see.
And I mean that the twins are out of canon at this point, but I think they've said if something works in our canon, we're going to bring it in and make it
legit. Yeah, I don't think they're going to bring Jane I don't know.
They don't have to be the same kids, but I just mean the idea of them having kids.
I think they're wanting to distance. I mean, I could see them being the kids of somebody, but there is a Skywalker in there somewhere, and I think it's Daisy Ridley's character.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that makes sense, too. Yep. So I'll be excited to see.
I'm not sure I've been this pumped for... I mean, like, so I recently started a beer website, and there's all these... We do a review every day of beer, and...
The name of the website.
It's stbrewis.com. If you like beer, check it out. But right now, I'm in the middle of... So beer trading is a big thing right now, and, like, there's lots of rare beers that people trade. I'm trading away some of my really rare beers that I have to get beers that are based around Star Wars names.
Like, that's cool.
Also, I can do a week long of beer reviews that are just Star Wars themed.
Nice.
That's pretty cool.
But like, I mean, like there's like Lightspeed Ale and like weird stuff like that where it's got like the hyperspeed like looking
that's
stuff.
That's kind of cool.
It's awesome. But
I mean, $6.5 million in one day on just IMAX pre-sales.
This thing
come
is going to be huge.
And there's less IMAX theaters than traditional theaters. Yeah. So if that tells you anything, extrapolate, carry the one, it's a crap load of money.
So Disney paid what, $4 billion for the rights?
Yeah,
so
which I thought was the deal of a lifetime.
Oh, but they're going to make $2 billion in one movie.
Yeah.
Well,
That doesn't count toys, licensing, not like
okay,
I can't believe it sold for only $4 billion.
Battlefront alone is probably going to make $500 million or $1 billion on
day one.
Yep. Yeah, I think Lucas probably gets a cut of the merchandising. You still think he gets a piece of that?
I don't think he sold it all away.
No,
I wonder.
I don't think
so. Who still owns 2.5% of Star Wars?
Spielberg, right?
Yep,
because of that bet.
Spielberg and Lucas had a bet. Lucas came onto the set of Close Encounters of the Third Kind and said that he thought it was going to be a more successful movie than Star Wars. And Spielberg says, I bet you it won't. And they trade it 2.5% of
they
each
other. They bet on each other's movies?
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah.
That's funny.
That's some old school Hollywood right there.
But
Yeah.
But like, I mean, that 2.5% has made Spielberg hundreds of millions of dollars.
That's why he can get away with doing a movie. Not get away with, but that's why he can do Bridge of Spies.
Yeah.
Do smaller stuff.
Well,
and not have...
I think he was going to be doing okay no matter what.
He would be. Correct. That's fair.
Oh,
that's
Steve.
Fair.
Steve and his indie movies.
Yeah, in those
crazy
quote,
indie
unquote,
Steve.
Indie movies.
Well, yeah, he made four of those
indie
movies.
Yeah. Exactly. And it all comes around.
So. But I do think it's funny that they sold Disney bought it. Like 48 hours later, they were like, Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
You know, before we get in the movie, Disney bought something else this week, which really
I thought was odd. I've never known them to do this.
What?
They bought the rights to Anastasia.
Yes, a movie that's not a Disney.
They bought the rights to a Fox movie that came out in like 97 or 98. It's a total Disney knockoff. And they acquired the rights, and now she's officially a Disney princess.
Isn't that interesting?
Was that based on anything? Or was that just a Fox property that they made up?
It's
completely
original. I think Anastasia is a
historical character.
Yeah, it's the King and I character, right?
Yeah.
Well, no, well, I mean, it's with Rasputin. And
yeah.
All,
is it Rasputin? I thought it was the other version of the
She's like the daughter of like a Russian Tsar or whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
Disney
I've never seen it.
No princesses outside of Disney. We're buying them all.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that it's become like it wasn't a huge, I don't think it was a huge hit at the time.
But it is very popular.
But it's gone on to become kind of a, cult might be a little underselling it, but
yeah.
But I've just never known them to acquire the rights to another cartoon and pull it into their world.
Isn't that? Yeah. I think that is so interesting.
Well, we've talked about it before, where Disney, the era of the director auteur is over,
right?
And Disney is becoming its own. It's so weird. So you've got like Disney proper, and then you've got like what Pixar, Disney Animation, Marvel, Lucasfilms. So you've got all these offshoots from Disney
that ostensibly operate as self-contained studios that are only there to produce one thing.
See that Disney is not putting their logo in front of Star Wars?
Really?
Yeah, they said they are not doing the...
Because I was watching... Cool. When I watched that trailer, I was looking for it. I saw Lucasfilm, and then I'm like, where's the Disney castle?
They don't want to take away because that opening's so iconic. And actually, I mean, one of the iconic things is everyone associates the Fox fanfare with it.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's going to be like the first movie that's missing that. And but I do like that they're not doing the Disney thing because I mean at the same time I thought it would be kind of neat.
Because they always customize it nowadays. Yeah. All the Disney movies customize it. It's not just the same castle.
Yeah, they should have done like a Carillion
black
castle.
And white castle cool. or you know pixelated.
It's the Millennium
castle.
Falcon
or like
a
Tatooine. Like
it
would have
been cool.
Disney
I would have done.
I would have been okay with
or an X-wing standing on end.
Oh, yeah, that would have been cool. Yeah, totally.
Before we get out of this, in the trailer is a desert planet that's featured a lot. And a lot of people, during the original teasers, everyone assumed it was Tatooine, and then it was revealed to be a planet called Jakku.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think it's actually Tatooine still? I think it's...
I think it probably is.
I think it's a misdirection. Well, you see the moisture evaporators and everything, and like the landscape. They don't show any of the suns or anything, but like...
Is there a reason why they wouldn't go back to Tatooine? Like to stay away from it? Like, would there be any reason to do that?
No. And I think what happened is you see that big giant Star Destroyer that's taken down. I think a big battle happened there and something with the planet happened where it came under new control, like away from the huts or something, and it's now a renamed planet, but it's the same planet.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay. I think that would be clever.
My theory is that it's Hoth. And the entire movie is about global warming.
And Al Gore is really Kylo Ren. Yes. Yeah. That's what it is.
And then Man Bear Pig is the real menace of the entire galaxy.
That's pretty good.
So there's our thoughts on the Star Wars trailer.
Star Wars.
Let's turn our eyes to Steve Jobs, shall we?
Where is he?
Since only two of us saw it.
Underground. I bought it.
But the other two own iPhones, right?
Yeah.
So we should be okay.
Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. I bought a ticket to
close
see
enough. I saw an iMac once. Yeah.
I saw the original. So
that Oregon Trail, let me tell you.
Yeah. Woo! Michael Fassbender, he's okay, but he's no Ashton Kutcher, I'll tell you that.
I was going to ask that before we get way into the movie. Do you think that did any damage to
this? No, I think it would have needed to be popular to do any damage.
But I mean, like, do you think anybody was like, oh,
I saw the other one.
Like, I don't want to see another one.
I don't think enough people saw it.
Dermot McRoney in it or whatever his name is.
Was it Dylan McDermott or Dermot McRoney?
That still is one of my favorite SNL sketches from the past few years. Because
true.
Well, like, and then I asked one of my black friends. I'm like, so could you tell the difference? And he's like, who?
I know one guy was on American Horror Story. That's what I can tell you. And I don't remember which one that was.
So this movie's written by Aaron Sorkin.
Yeah.
Does it have the Aaron Sorkin?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Oh.
This movie is like freebasing Aaron Sorkin.
It is.
Like,
all
this
it is
the Aaron Sorkinist Aaron Sorkin that Aaron's ever
Sorkin. Yeah.
It's like, I don't even know how to describe
it. It is just Aaron Sorkin conversations in rooms. That is the entire movie.
The movie is essentially three scenes.
I thought you were going to say 3 hours. And I was going to be like,
no, it's two hours.
It.
felt 3 hours.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as like it's a bad movie. It's just, it's an exhausting movie, I thought.
Do you think that Steve Jobs is...
Was.
Well, the...
Do you feel like your arm was trapped in a boulder and you had to cut it off with a pocket knife?
But I mean, like,
I like that movie.
Yeah, that was a weird movie. I like that.
That's Danny Boyle too.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Did you feel like you were doing a bunch of drugs and then you had to get on a train?
Did you feel like you were being chased by zombies? Can we keep doing this? How many more? The sunshine?
Did you feel like you were getting shot into the heart of the sun?
With the beach? What can we do?
Was
one
that
with
him?
The beach? Yeah, that's him.
Man. But I mean, like, do you think that him as a person was big enough to sell a movie?
You know, you mean just from a business standpoint?
Well, from a business standpoint, and do you think enough people would be interested in the life of Steve Jobs?
I don't know if it's a little too late or if it's like overdone because we've seen all these biopics and we've heard so much about him. I think it is an interesting story and how he started from nothing and then battled his own company and came back. I mean, it is a very interesting.
He's arguably the most famous businessman of last almost, you know, half a century.
He's the most popular businessman.
The later half of the 20th century. Yeah. The first half, I think you got to give to Walt Disney.
Yeah, and then, like, you know, like, before that, you know, you're like Thomas Edison, which Jobs to me is basically the late 20th century's Thomas Edison. He was the guy who wasn't actually creating the
ideas. But
he was basically the one who was credited with a lot
of
the ideas.
Well, and see, this is my problem with the movie, and maybe this is just how it is, but, like, I watched this movie, I still don't get what Steve Jobs did.
But I love that explanation. So there's a scene in the movie, and really, I think all we can do is kind of pick it apart like we are now,
right?
Because there's not that much to, like, go through the synopsis or whatever.
Yeah, because we should probably back up and just talk about the framing sequence, how the movie is structured, because it's a little different in that it's essentially three very long scenes. It's one long Aaron Sorkin walk and talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not an origin story.
Which I usually enjoy. It's not an origin story.
And each scene takes place, in the 10 minutes before
a product launch,
like when he goes out on stage.
Okay.
And so,
okay.
And so apparently every important conversation he's ever had takes place within 10 minutes. What's really funny is my wife pointed this out. She's like, the final 45 minutes of the movie takes place in the 6 minutes before the product launch. So I'm like, apparently Steve Jobs also invented time travel.
Now, to be fair, you know, that last scene, and we'll get into it, but he was late. Steve Jobs was notorious for never being late. He's a technology company, doesn't want to start late. The last scene involves some family matters, not Urkel, not Tyrell. No, but and he goes, you know, and they're like, you're gonna be late, and he's like, I don't care. So he was late in that one, but but everything did feel like I didn't have a stopwatch, but it was like you have 6 minutes before you go on, and then there'd be an Aaron Sorkin conversation,
right? And Aaron Sorkin, they're
not like, what's up? Okay,
so he's never done anything in 6 minutes.
Yeah,
well, good for his wife, I guess.
I mean, we don't.
So the opening scene is before the launch of the original Macintosh.
Okay.
And so there's lots of internal strife about like the Apple II, and he doesn't want to thank or mention the Apple II design team, which the Apple II is their cash cow.
70% of the company's income, I believe they said, came from the Apple II, and then everything else makes up.
And the Macintosh is basically the exact opposite of the Apple II. What people love about the Apple II, which was that you could kind of get in and hack it, and it had
mod
all these ports,
if you will.
And all, yeah, and excuse me, and the Macintosh won't allow any of that. It's a completely closed system.
And if you know how Apple is now, and obviously that's all the Steve Jobs influence, you cannot change things about Apple. You cannot, you know, they have their own headphone ports sometimes, chargers.
They have proprietary ports. Everything's soldered to the motherboard these days.
Yeah,
like,
they don't let you...
You cannot upgrade your Mac anymore.
And so that's something that we see from the very beginning. Steve Wozniak, played by Seth Rogen.
How is he?
He's good.
He's good.
Really good.
I mean,
he's
he doesn't
straight
have.
Character.
I'm assuming he's not the Seth.
He's
Rogen.
Not Seth Rogen. He's...
No. But at the same time, like, he's not. He has no heavy lifting in this movie. I mean, he's he's good, but it certainly was not like...
It wasn't a Seth Rogen.
It wasn't a revelation that, oh my God.
Not when Jonah Hill shows up in Moneyball and you're like, oh Christ.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
He's really good though. But so Seth Rogen playing Steve Wozniak and of course Fassbender as Jobs, or they flash back to a conversation in the garage when they were making the original computer, which made them who they are, who they became. I mean, it was all started in the garage. And Jobs is kind of, he's really angry and upset because Wozniak wants to allow the computer to be expandable. He designed a motherboard, which is like, you know, in his terms is beautiful. It's all laid out so that it's all compact, but there's like 8 different expansion slots, and that had never been done before. He was able to fit all these in, and Jobs is like, lock it down to 2. And he's like, I got this all to work with 10, and people want to add cards and remove things, whatever. And Jobs is like, nope. He's like, at this time, it might have been a modem port, you know.
He wanted a modem and a printer.
He wanted, a modem and a printer so they can get online and you can print. That's it. And so that's a battle that Woz is like, well, then I'm not going to be releasing
your nickname basis now.
Well,
how they refer to him in the movie.
He's the Woz.
And they position it as like, this is the only argument that he's ever lost. Jobs has ever lost.
Okay.
And it's why the Apple II is so popular.
Yeah, because, flash forward. Yeah, and he says something like, you know, it's a good thing that I won that argument.
Right.
Because he said, well, I'm not releasing this computer then, you know, and so it ended up being expandable. And then fast forward, the Apple II had been around for 9 years, was it? And that it's making 70% of the company's income. It's been around for 9 years still. It's a 9-year-old system accounting for that much sales.
Wow.
And people love it because you can expand it and modify it and all that. So Steve Jobs is absolutely all about proprietary. He's all about locking it down. He doesn't want people to get into it. Before the launch, this Macintosh, this model was called the Macintosh, it kept crashing. And so he's going to his hardware developer.
It's a type of Apple, Joe.
I know what it is.
I just want to make sure.
I'm well aware.
Was this the character? Was that
They've retroactively changed his name to the Granny Smith. Because it's an old model.
It's a Fuji Apple.
It's an old model.
Yeah, it's a Fuji.
So he goes to his
The Japanese model.
Oh, yeah, right.
He goes to his hardware developer, Andy. And this is Andy Hertzfeld.
Because
there's two Andys, and there's a recurring joke where he always mentions Andy, and there's two of them, so he has to mention which one. And
I stole that joke from Hot Fuzz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the Andes are in Hot Fuzz.
Maybe Hot Fuzz stole it from Steve Jobs.
Maybe. Edgar Wright is a nerd. It's true.
And so they're about to go on. They've got, I think, 45 minutes at this point before the house fills up and they announce the Macintosh, and it keeps crashing. And he said...
It's supposed to say hello when you boot it up.
It's supposed to talk. And this was after that big Super Bowl commercial.
The whole world's watching this launch because they want to see what that commercial was about.
Exactly. Because the commercial didn't actually show anything.
Right.
It was just a hype, and it was great, and it worked.
Just
perfect
trailer.
Yeah. Now they want to release the computer and you know, obviously have it be successful. So it isn't going to say hello. There's a 1 in 6 chance it'll say hello. Otherwise, it keeps crashing. And so they go back and forth a couple different times, and to see the type of person that Steve Jobs is and that we've kind of heard him to be. I mean, he was a tough guy. He was not a...
He was
a...
This is one of my problems with the movie, and I mean their main character is who he is, since it's a biopic, like you can't really adjust it, and I don't want them to, but it was also part of what stops me from loving this movie is that it very early into the movie I wanted to punch Steve Jobs right in the and that never went away.
Holy
I hate the dude.
Yeah.
I don't like him at all. I think he's an asshole. I think he's a lousy manager who got lucky, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I think that like that the scene with Hertzfeld where I felt like it was supposed to be this show what a great manager he was, and all I could think of is he was a horrible manager.
Right.
He wasn't solving a problem. He was throwing a temper tantrum.
Yeah.
Because all he did was say to Andy over and over again, "You have to fix it. Just fix it." Like that doesn't make you a good manager. You can't.
Of course, he knows he has to fix it.
Yeah. Like you can't just say you have to float. Like it doesn't matter if it can't. You can scream that all you want, but it doesn't make you a good manager.
Right.
And I'm like, and I know.
Hey guys, you have to make this entertaining.
Yeah.
Managed. Boom.
Right. That doesn't make you Alfred Hitchcock. Right. Like that's. And I just I'm like watching this, and the deeper we got in this movie, the more I was like, I think Steve Jobs was a con artist.
Yeah.
I don't think he was good at anything except convincing people he was good at things.
He was a marketer.
Yeah.
He
I say that as a marketer. Like, that's what I do for a living. It's what it says on my business card. And, like, and I just, I'm watching this, and again, I know that I'm watching a version of this that, that Hollywood created. So,
right.
So maybe in real life that's not true. I haven't read the Jobs autobiography. But based on this movie, I think Steve Jobs was a con artist who got lucky and has, and the only skill set he has is convincing people that he has skill sets.
Yeah. That's it. I think that's a very interesting idea.
That.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
he's a poster child for the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I, in my opinion, Bob Kane is the same way. Bob Kane.
That's a very,
Kane con everybody.
History is littered with people. Like I was talking about Thomas Edison earlier.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Thomas Edison like gets credit for inventing all this stuff, but most of it was
Tesla.
Right.
Yeah. Well, Tesla and other, and lots of other scientists that he just basically bought their, or he employed them, and then he would screw them over later on money, like, just like Steve Jobs did with Wozniak.
And, Bob Kane, the guy that created Batman, everything you know about Batman was Bill Finger.
Yeah.
It's not Bob Kane.
Yeah.
And only until this year did they come to an agreement with the Bill Finger
They're going to put
his name on Batman versus Superman. Yeah. They're going to put his name on
everything.
That's
so cool. They finally did that.
He's finally going to get the credit. His family was here 2 years ago.
Yeah, Comic-Con.
Just to spread the word. Yeah. And if you look, like, he created Robin. He created the Batcave. He created the Batmobile. Gordon.
Then, like, the Riddler.
Did he do the,
like,
Joker? Because that was pretty early.
I don't know, because that was
somebody else.
I don't think it was Joker, but Riddler, I believe.
Jerry Robinson.
Okay. He was responsible for so many villains and Batcave, Batmobile,
and
if you
look at anything that was on that was Batman related, it said Batman created by Bob Kane.
Right.
Yeah.
Never
Which he
Bill
was.
Finger.
I mean, Batman, the character, was...
The name that, Batman.
That,
yeah.
That looked nothing like Batman.
No,
he was
blonde, red suit. He had like a red suit. He had like a domino mask. But like,
And I get it, though. Like, if you own a property, if you create it and you hire people, I get that it is still yours and you created it, but the fact that Bill Finger never got credit is what the sad part is.
Never, until
I mean,
just recently.
He was an employee. It's not like he could own it, but to not put him on anything is wrong because he was so responsible.
Exactly. But and it sounds like Jobs.
I think that's a great comparison. Yeah.
I don't like the guy, and so it was really hard. It was really difficult, even though it was well written. It was really difficult to spend 2 hours with the guy.
See, I've
never gotten the Jobs worship.
Neither have I. I mean, I guess I understand that he's the leader of this ginormous company. Like, I get that.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't see the draw.
I walked away from this movie thinking he's a perfect example of a guy who failed upwards.
Yeah.
And then he got...
Like John Peters.
And he got really lucky at the exact right moment in time with the iMac.
Yeah, a lot
That's,
of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're absolutely
definitely
right.
A lot of it. You know, I didn't have exactly the same feeling. I mean, I've always heard that Steve Jobs was kind of a jerk. And I mean, even before he passed away, I heard it, you know, watching the Jobs movie with Kutcher showed it, you know, this one, I didn't read all this book, but I mean, that's how he was. But, you know, whatever he did, I mean, I don't think it was completely luck. Like all these things and the way he was, he wasn't a people person and he was a jerk, but he did get stuff done. And I think he did revolutionize things. He didn't solder the motherboards, but he told people what to solder or what to do, and they soldered the boards and made these inventions. And I think he was great at marketing and ideas.
Well, then
he just didn't know how to get them done.
Well, then the problem is that the movie never really shows you that.
No, and it doesn't. The movie is more just the movie is not about that, the big picture ideas and everything. But you know, he was responsible for the iMac and the iPod. He didn't build those things, but he was responsible for the company making these devices and revolutionizing.
But at no point in the movie do you see him work.
No, you don't.
I mean?
You don't.
So,
he's
just running around
and
running
so
his mouth. All you hear is what a genius and visionary is, but you never actually see him do anything genius, and you never see him say anything visionary.
Yeah.
And from a work standpoint.
Right. So
and
this
do you think he was, I guess, does the movie make it feel like he was maybe more of the mouthpiece of Apple rather than the creator?
Yeah.
Like, does
oh,
that make
for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
He is the...
like the face of the company
he's
rather
their
than...
He's
hype
man.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly. For sure. Yeah. That is what this movie is about.
Yeah.
But, you know, I thought it was, I mean, extremely well written. So like the Ashton Kutcher movie, did anyone see that?
No.
Okay.
Did you?
I
saw it. Oh.
I enjoyed it. I think people gave him way more crap than he deserves. Was it as
he deserves it.
I mean, you didn't see it.
I just mean in life.
Yeah, maybe in life. But, like, that movie was entertaining. I thought Ashton Kutcher, the way he carried his body, his mannerisms, the way he talked, the way he looked, like...
I think he kind of chewed the scenery a bit.
A little bit.
It was obvious he was doing an impression rather...
Right.
It didn't look natural.
Really?
Like, yeah.
I thought it was an interesting story. It was more entertaining than this one. You know, it was more of a more.
I didn't think it was a terrible movie. Yeah. I didn't think Ashton Kutcher was very good in it, but I thought the rest of the movie was okay.
Yeah, I thought the movie was pretty entertaining, pretty informational, but by no means, like, when you see an Aaron Sorkin written movie, like, it had no dialogue like this one, so I really thought the writing was top notch.
Yeah, I thought it was well written. Yeah, I think
the conversations were extremely interesting, and especially about Jobs' family life and his daughter that he wouldn't admit was his daughter. Like, those conversations.
What? Yeah, he was kind of a sucker.
Yeah, he had.
How come everybody gets to cuss on this show except me? Like, I haven't said one word yet. Everybody else gets the...
Okay, go ahead and cuss.
Motherfucker!
Okay. Yeah.
So
now
he had...
equitable.
So there's a woman that had a child that he slept with that they broke up or whatever, and then a court did a paternity test, and there was, what, a
94% chance?
It was a 94% chance accurate that it was Steve Jobs.
And keep in mind, this predates DNA.
Right.
So 94% chance that he is the father of this child, and he denied it adamantly, saying that, oh, well, that 6% accounted for, it could be
28% of the men in America
could be the father. He like came up with a crazy calculation and convinced himself, even though he knew it, and I think he obviously admitted it later on, but he convinced himself he was not this girl's father, and he was worth $500 million, and the girlfriend, baby mama, whatever, they're living on welfare. And
he was paying them
$300 a month.
Because that's what the court ordered.
$300 a month, and he's worth $500 million, and they're on welfare.
What a piece of garbage.
And so that's what they show in this movie, and these conversations.
That's what I get now. And that's for two kids.
So you have these conversations. So you're in crunch time. He's about to announce this new Macintosh, and he's got 45 minutes. The machine isn't working right. You know, so he's talking to Kate Winslet, plays his like advisor, his right-hand man who's responsible for all his scheduling and whatever. You know, she's the main assistant. So he's talking to her. She's like, well, you've got the ex-girlfriend and Lisa, the daughter, are in the hallway. He's having Andy come in to talk to him about the board and getting this computer to talk and say hello. You know, and all this is going on simultaneously, and he's juggling it all. And it is an intense conversations. Like, I thought it was just fascinating. I was in this movie.
I do think very few writers are able to... write dialogue the way Sorkin does, and we all know that, but what I mean is, like, he's able to weave a story with so many different people
and
with so many balls in the air,
so
and
much
keep,
is
and
going
keep
on
everything, you know,
and
somehow contained
and be very clever. And I think sometimes that can be a downfall, that he can get a little too clever. I think sometimes the kid spoke in a way that even for a really smart kid, I don't think a kid would ever speak.
Right. I think that worked well in The Social Network because they were all kind of that quick talking smart kids. Like, and that made sense to me.
This kid's six.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense to me. Right. And I think the other problem Sorkin runs into sometimes is that if the stakes aren't high enough, his dialogue seems overblown.
Oh,
so
see.
like that was one of the problems with Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, is that
was that him?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was still written like it was The West Wing, and it wasn't that the dialogue wasn't good. It was that
for that setting.
For that setting, it's like, we're talking about sketch comedy.
Was that a single season show?
It only went for a season. Yeah.
Okay.
And it was just fascinating to watch it implode. I watched every episode, and it wasn't good. It was maddening.
Who starred on that?
Bradley Whitford and
Matthew Perry.
Okay. For whatever reason, I got that confused with 30 Rock.
Well, because they started at the same time, and everybody thought 30 Rock would flame out, and this was going to be... And I will say, based on the pilot for Studio 60, one of the best pilots I've ever
seen
in my life.
Yeah.
It was
that Judd Hirsch opening
or whatever. And I was just like, I am in. And like, the pilot's what kept me in for as long as I did. And then by the time I decided I hated it, I was like, I hate watched it. I couldn't.
That part in the pilot where like Timothy Bushfield's the director and the standards and practices guy is like, you know, cut it, like cut commercial. He's like, wait, and like Judd Hirsch is going on
just like going at it.
The entire time you hear like Judd Hirsch just like freaking like going crazy on television. And it's a powerful scene.
But I think what it comes down to is that Aaron Sorkin is drawn to characters that are assholes,
yeah,
but the smartest guy in the room and right. And I think that's because Aaron Sorkin is probably an asshole who's typically the smartest guy in the room, and he certainly likes to think he's right.
Yeah, well, I guess that's true. What's with Jeff Daniels from the Newsroom?
Newsroom?
The exact same way, yeah.
And that was Matthew Perry's character in Studio 60.
Who
and
was it
let's
on
just
the
go
West
through
Wing?
You know what?
Everybody.
But Social Network, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yeah, yeah.
You look at a few.
Moneyball.
Moneyball. Few Good Men. What is Few Good Men? It is two assholes who are both right.
He had everything he wanted.
I'm trying to think of who the asshole would be. I think maybe that's one of the reasons why West Wing is so good. None of the characters were really assholes.
Right.
They were idealistic, but they weren't assholes.
Right. And I think that's why it's easier to deal with his level of intensity on dialogue, is because the stakes are really high.
Bartlett
when you're in the White
House. Like the perfect president for like anybody. Like he's like idealistic to the point where like it's hard to disagree with him on almost anything.
Yeah.
And it would never work in real life.
But
that's why it worked.
He
in
was
TV.
Clinton without the baggage.
Yeah. That's
he
a good
was
point.
Clinton without the libido.
I never thought about that. That's a very good. Yeah, without the libido
and with MS.
Yeah, eventually. Yeah, but I think that's what drew him to this movie is I think and I think ultimately what might have happened here, and this might be some of my disconnect with the film a little bit, even though I will say it's a good movie. Like I don't think it's a bad movie.
It's a good looking movie.
Yeah, and it's interesting because each section is shot on a different type of film stock.
Interesting.
Yeah, so it's so cool seeing the film grain. And,
so, like,
oh,
as the technology
cool.
gets better, so does the technology
the
to shoot the movie
look.
On.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is
kind of a cool,
subtle
yeah.
but clever.
Yeah.
And, but that I think Aaron Sorkin wrote what he thinks is a love letter to Steve Jobs. And
okay.
I think Danny Boyle and Michael Fassbender made a different movie. And so you have this core of like Steve Jobs was a dick, but he was right, and so you got to deal with that because when you're dealing with visionaries like us,
right,
this is what you're.
I can totally see that being Aaron Sorkin,
right?
Too.
Yeah. And then I think that Danny Boyle and Michael Fassbender went a different direction with how they.
Well, this guy's an egomaniac.
So
he might have been right, but he was also just enormous dick.
You know, and it's like there's a line towards the end where Seth Rogen is like, "It's not binary. You can be a visionary and a decent human being."
Yeah, there was some good writing.
There are some great lines in the movie. Yeah.
Danny Boyle always kind of like Danny Boyle and older guy Richie. I kind of think of them as like punk rock, where they were just kind of going against the grain and they were just doing their own thing. So like when you hear that he's going to tackle something that is like big business,
right?
It's like maybe he is going to put like you're saying, like maybe he is going to put a different spin. Like it's not going to be a love
letter.
Danny
Boyle is, I feel like, one of the most underappreciated directors in Hollywood.
I agree.
Like I feel like that's a guy who can take just about any genre and makes do. I mean, he has
a modern day Howard Hawks.
Well, yeah. No. Well, like have any of you seen Millions?
No,
he was
no.
a kid. It was a kids movie he did probably about a decade ago, and it's awesome. I mean, it's a great film, and it's targeted towards kids, but it's a great film for adults to watch too. It's about like it's during the currency exchange from when Europe's switching over to euros, and a bag full of British pounds get thrown off a train into this kid's little tent area he has set up off these train tracks, and he finds he battles with his family on like they want to spend it, but he just wants to give it away. He's like a pure-hearted little kid or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's so well done, and I'm like, it's amazing to me that he can do something that's so heartfelt and almost a little sappy, but then at the same time do 28 Days Later and Train Spotting
Sunshine
and Sunshine,
which
like,
I think is a great movie.
Sunshine's fantastic.
Falls apart a little bit at the end, gets
it's
a little but
one of the best looking movies
I've
ever
seen. It's a great movie.
Yeah.
And but that the setup, the first hour of that movie's amazing.
Oh yeah.
When they announced Chris Evans as Captain America, I was like, "Oh, bull." And then I saw Sunshine, I was like,
"You're like, okay.
Oh, all right."
Yeah. Yeah. Now that movie is a lot of his stuff is underrated, but even if he doesn't do something that's great, it's usually at least good.
Right.
He doesn't have a lot of flops. Yeah. A lot of stinkers.
Out of curiosity, who is the cinematographer on this? Does it say?
Let's see. Your cinematographer was Alwin H. Kuk. It's a German.
Okay.
Cooler?
Well, wasn't his cinematographer the guy who went on to do Ex Machina? Isn't that right? Weren't they would go hand in hand.
Danny
for a while.
Boyle would work with the same guy?
Yeah, I think
I'm not sure.
Oh, geez, I don't know.
I think that's right. But
I think he did the
cinematography for like 28 Days Later and
let me see. 28 Days Later, the cinematographer was Anthony Dodd Mantle.
All right.
And he also did the cinematography on Trance, 127 Hours, Slumdog Millionaire, Millions. Did I say 28 Days Later?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the ones he worked on. But
I thought the guy that did Ex Machina was somehow in the Danny Boyle camp.
Yeah, I don't see his filmography. I don't see Ex Machina on there anywhere.
Okay.
So. But anyway, yeah, this is a great looking movie. It is just so fascinating to see the behind the scenes, you know, because we know that Apple is this incredible company. Obviously, they have more money than anyone right now.
Sure.
They've created products that have changed our lives with how many people have iPhones, iPads, you know, iPods obviously were revolutionary in music.
Man,
so
I had a 160 gig iPod and it got stolen and then they discontinued it.
Then you can't buy that anymore.
And it's like $600. And I was like,
everyone wants the big just music iPods.
That's all I wanted, yeah.
Because they had like actual huge hard drives.
Correct.
But, you know, the thing is, we all know Apple and it's
all cloud based now, Kevin.
Yeah. We all know.
You pay $10 a month, yeah.
We all know Apple, but we don't know how they got to where they are. And, you know, we see these different points in Steve Jobs' life. And I just thought it was fascinating. And, you know, when you're in three conference rooms or whatever you want to call it before presentations, like, you wouldn't think that's the most interesting thing, right? Okay, there's going to be some tech presentations. Yeah. How are we going to watch 2 hours of three different tech presentations? But the way it's written by Sorkin, the way it's portrayed by Fassbender, his acting, Michael Fassbender,
I think,
is one of the greatest actors of our generation.
I cannot agree more.
Love that guy. He is an incredible actor. And
giant wiener. Apparently. Well, if, what was the...
Shame.
What does that have to do with Steve McQueen? What was the...
Shame.
Shame, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Is that considered big then?
I think so.
So, I mean...
I don't know. I'm just...
No, I didn't realize that
he
was
doesn't
big.
Have
so,
one.
I, you know. So,
yeah. I'm just... Yeah. I don't know. It's been married. It's gone. It fell off.
So anyway, great actor, Michael Fassbender. But his performance is great. He talks like Steve Jobs. He has a lot lighter voice, you know, and it did sound like him. He did carry himself with the body language. I thought it was just fantastic. So the acting's great. The writing's great. Really interesting story. So the first time period is the...
It's 84.
84, and it's the Macintosh launch, and we see how that it ends up working out. So it says hello or whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, they cheat.
They do cheat. They use a computer with higher memory.
They use the next generation computer that isn't shipping for like a year.
But they're like, it will ship, and all we're doing is having it say hello. So they kind of figured out how to make it work. Andy did, because Steve Jobs, another move, Steve Jobs threatened Andy because he goes, I am going to thank every single member of the Macintosh team. I'm going to say visuals by this person, motherboard this person, this design by this person, and the hello demo that just failed by Andy Hertzfeld.
Yeah.
And so he's like, fix it.
Oh, good Lord.
So he threatened to basically in front of all, this was a shareholders tech meeting and all the journalists were there, and he threatened to basically call him out and say, yeah, everything was great. The thing that didn't
he's
work.
He's the guy from Whiplash.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
What do you mean? Oh. Yeah. He's the J.K. Simmons. Yeah. Yeah.
So he threatened him, and that's when he figured out, well, we use the higher memory or whatever. So I think what that shows, I mean, so Steve Jobs was a jerk in that way, but look, his methods got things done.
There
I think
are certain
that's
type
what
of
they're...
leaders in the world. There are leaders who lead by example, and there are leaders who lead by threats. Yeah. By
and I'm
fear.
Not saying
yeah.
it's
fear,
good or
yeah.
bad. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but that's who Steve Jobs was, and that's what this movie shows. Because guess what? It said hello in the end, didn't
right,
it?
Right.
He was a huge... He was not a nice person. It said hello. Apple made, well, then the Macintosh failed. So that wasn't a good example. But the thing said hello because he wanted it to say hello and he wasn't going to put up with any other excuses. So that's who Steve Jobs was. And I thought what was so fascinating, because I have heard of the company Next, Steve Jobs, he got fired. He called a shareholders meeting and because the Macintosh was failing, and the guy that came from Pepsi was the
He was the CEO.
He was the CEO of Pepsi. He came on board
Scully.
To Apple, John Scully, and Jobs is the one that wanted Scully to come lead the company.
Yeah,
so
he lured him in.
He got him hired, but then, you know, they kind of had their differences, and John Scully said, you do not want to call this meeting, because Steve Jobs is basically like, I'm sick of this crap, everything, call the meeting for the board members. Scully's like, they want you out, and he's like, call the meeting. So he calls the meeting kind of behind Scully's back. They all show up and Scully goes, okay, I will step down, but what did he say? It's basically came down to him or me,
right?
He's like, I will step down if you want me to, and you can have Steve lead. Let's have the vote. And they all voted unanimously to have Steve leave. So John Scully said he would step down if they wanted. No one wanted it. So he got kicked out of his own company. So anyway, fast forward a couple years, whatever, he starts this company Next, and it was supposed to be a computer to compete with Macintosh and the Apple II and all that. And it basically was called the Square, the Cube, was it?
I think they were
the
calling
Black
it
the Cube. Box. Yeah. So it's the Black Box. It was supposed to be sold to schools. This thing cost
$12,000.
This thing, it all added up. Like, you could buy the computer for $3,000, but then these peripherals were $2,000. This was, but
to really make it do anything,
right, you had to spend $12,000. So in what, 1988? In 1988, they expected a school to buy individual computers at $12,000 each.
Yeah.
And so, but this is the thing. This is what's so fascinating. Steve Jobs knew that would never fly. So why was he investing all of his money into building this $12,000 machine no one would buy? He was building a computer that did exactly what the next generation Apple computer needed to do. And he held all the patents, all the technology. So he just built a company that Apple would be forced to buy.
Interesting.
Gee, I mean, what a fascinating concept. Yeah, he never expected Next to work. And so even at the demo, what they were showing, the demo, we come to find out, and again, you should see this movie, it's just fascinating, but he just built a demo with features that he knew Apple would want to buy and have to have in their next computer.
Okay.
So the computer did not do anything on its own.
So he didn't give a crap about the computer.
He did.
But he knew that if Apple saw what that computer did, they would buy
his company. So they,
interesting.
So the demo went well, you know, it did what they wanted, and then fast forward a couple years, they actually started selling these $12,000 computers, but no one bought them, but he knew they wouldn't.
Right.
So they're like, Next is doing terrible, selling no computers, and the next thing they say, Apple buys Next. And Steve Jobs came along with that package. If you want to buy Next, you buy it
for
millions, whatever. I run Apple. So then they fast forward to part three, and that is right before the iMac launch. And Apple was going to file bankruptcy. That company was going to collapse. And then their saving grace was after Steve Jobs came back and they invented the iMac. And then after that was the iPod, and we don't see as much of that, but it all revolves around the iMac.
And Jonathan Ives probably should give more credit for the iMac than anybody else. I mean, people bought it because of the way it looked.
Right.
The,
yeah. Yeah. So, but and so
Ives is basically the guy who has guided the entire product since basically the iMac in looks. And let's be honest, most people buy Macs for their looks.
Right.
Not,
right.
Yeah. So, not for anything else.
So exactly. So that's the thing, is that Steve Jobs didn't design the Mac, and he didn't screw in, you know, the screws to the back of it and design the case and make the molds.
Right.
But Steve Jobs told people to do he found people like Ives. He found people like Wozniak. And there's an amazing, again, by Sorkin, this amazing scene, which I can't remember if it's in the first segment or the second segment. I think it was the second one, right before the Next demo that they did. And Wozniak comes to see Next. All his old Apple colleagues actually are invited to go see the Next launch, which,
yeah,
you know, he was like, why are you guys here? But they all still wanted to kind of support him. And Wozniak was like, I don't get it. You know, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but Wozniak's like, I don't get it. What do you do? I still don't know what you do, Steve. I don't get it. He's like, I invented the Apple IIe. I invented the board. I made the computer work. But why doesn't your daughter know my name? Because in an earlier scene, Lisa, his daughter, you know, sees him, and he's like, hey, it's Steve. How's it going? And she's like, I'm sorry, I don't remember you. And so he says, why doesn't your daughter know my name? But everybody in the news and the press, everybody knows Steve Jobs. Why is that? And I don't get what you do. And Steve Jobs says, you know, I had the same conversation about a conductor in an orchestra. You know, what does a conductor do? What does a conductor do that a metronome can't do? And then so when Wozniak asked that question, he's like, I play the orchestra. He's like, I am the conductor. You know, what does the conductor do?
Yeah.
He plays the orchestra. So,
right,
you know,
right,
obviously it's amazing with Sorkin's writing, and I paraphrase, but it was so powerful. I'm like, that's awesome. He tells that whole scene with, you know, and he's like, Steve, what do? I play the orchestra.
Yeah.
That's what he does.
That makes sense.
He plays the people that create the design, that create the motherboards, that create the software. He is the conductor playing the orchestra. And then that symphony is amazing. Right.
Right.
So
right.
It's just like that kind of writing.
He's a project manager.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can gussy it up all he wants.
Right,
he's
right,
project
right.
Man.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's not doing the work, but he's managing it. And as much as you may hate his methods, not agree with them, they may not be always ethical. We know a lot of things that Apple has done. You know, how about like child labor in China, making who
sure.
makes these iPods or whatever, but people still buy them up. You know, so even though all that happens, whether you agree with it or not, at the end of the day, Apple has more cash on hand than any company in the world.
Yeah, no, it's
so
true.
Like, you know what I mean? The results. I'm not saying they did it fair. I'm not saying I do or do not agree with it. But at the end of the day, Steve Jobs' douchebaggery and his vision for accepting nothing less than success and winning got them there.
Did they coincide this release of the movie with any Apple product?
No, the stuff launched a few weeks ago.
That's what those iPhone 6?
Yeah, 6S and the watch and all that launched, you know,
okay,
before.
All
so
right. Thought that was a missed opportunity. You need any more money.
Right.
I mean,
yeah. I just thought it was fascinating. And for three different basically segments of people just talking before a press conference for a technology release.
Right.
Like, again, on paper, that sounds terrible. I found it fascinating.
Yeah, I was certainly intrigued. I just found Jobs himself to be such an exhausting personality.
Yeah, for sure.
That it got difficult to sit through at times just because I just needed a break from the dude.
He's the main character, and you really don't like him.
And he's on screen 100% of the time.
Yeah.
And the other thing I found interesting is that this could, and it really kind of shows Aaron Sorkin's roots, is that this could easily be a stage play.
Oh, really?
I
guess you said it's like one scene, one room.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple flashbacks, but those could be
scene changes.
Those could be like scene changes or just, incorporated into the dialogue very easily.
This is all dialogue. It easily could be
a stage play. Not only could be a stage play, it could be a radio play.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't even need to look at it. Not saying it doesn't look good, but that you don't need to look at it. It's so talky, and they're talking so fast that if they talked at a normal pace, this probably would be a 3-hour film.
Yeah.
It's definitely one of those rapid fire. Everybody's talking. It maybe not
they're
double
all like
speed,
deadlines.
But it's all deadline talk. So, instead of talking like this, everybody's talking like this. A couple clicks faster. Reminds me of Moonlighting. They used to talk about how much dialogue was in a Moonlighting script back in the day. That it was like their scripts were twice as long as any other hour-long program on television. Because
that was an hour. That was an hour-long show.
Yeah, because so much of their dialogue overlapped, and so you would have to write all these pieces, and then you would intertwine them. And so even though it was still taking place within an hour,
you had to write an hour and a half worth of show.
Right. So it kind of reminded me of that. But
interesting.
But certainly not a bad movie. I just don't think I liked it as much as Kevin just because I could not stand Steve Jobs.
Yeah.
I could definitely see where if the main character is a dick and there's nothing to attract me to that main character, I don't care.
Especially when
And I want
almost,
you to fail.
Almost instantly I didn't like his managerial style. I didn't think it's a good managerial style. And I also because of the way the movie portrays him, I question even what he did. So I didn't even have, as a film goer, I didn't even have, but he's really good.
Right.
He might be a jerk. Mark Zuckerberg's a jerk, but, you can't argue with the results. And, I can't argue with the results of Apple, but based on this film, I feel like I can argue with how much control he truly had over it.
Yeah.
I don't know. And this movie certainly didn't show me.
Hmm. Interesting.
So, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah.
So there you go. I guess that's Jobs.
That's Jobs.
Yeah.
Steve Jobs.
We just gave you a job.
Steve Jobs.
What?
Uh-huh.
No, we didn't.
No, we don't do that.
Nope. Creepy Joe might.
Nope. I have to draw a line somewhere.
What if you got a couple beers in you?
I'd be bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then it's back on the table.
Yeah, so for 2 years. That's bad.
Man,
news.
Your tolerance. Your tolerance must be like a drop in your crazy town.
So but anyway, so next week, I don't know what we're gonna do. The big movies are Burnt, which is
the Bradley Cooper cooking movie. Gordon Ramsay biopic.
It actually looks pretty good.
It does look kind of good.
He's a high-end chef.
Falls into alcoholism, and now he's been sober, and he's coming back.
Oh, it's not a Gordon Ramsay
biopic.
No.
And there's that, and then Our Brand is Crisis, the Sandra Bullock movie where she plays Mary Maitland, and then the movie I'm interested in is called Room. And it's about the abducted girl and her child that are raped.
With Brie Larson.
Yes. Yeah.
She's good.
Yeah. So we'll have to see. I read the book. The book was really good.
I'll check that out.
I've been hearing people say that Brie Larson will probably be in Oscar talks because of...
I guess we're getting there.
We're starting to creep up on Oscar season. We're starting to get out of intended for Oscar but not good enough season season. So you never know. So I guess let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
I'm Blake Fail. You can find me at Epic Fail, F-E-H-L, on Twitter. Yeah.
Did you get a new Twitter or something? Now he's got a couple beers in
it. I had an Epic Fail.
Yeah. This is Joe. You can also follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, B-U-T-T-S, 21.
I'm Kevin Brackett. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And I am Tom O'Keefe. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. Don't forget, if you would like to continue the conversation online, you can find us at Facebook.com/Real Spoilers, or you can email us at RealSpoilers@ReviewSTL.com or on Twitter at Real Spoilers. And that's Real with two E's. You probably know that by now, but
hopefully.
Just in case you don't.
Or in case you're dumb.
Right. Which would explain why you like the show. So, don't forget, we're available on the iTunes. Could I interest you in a subscription? I know we talk about it all the time, but it's free. It's not like one of those magazine subscriptions that they sell door to door, and you're wondering if you're ever really going to see that copy.
I was once addicted to drugs and alcohol.
Precisely.
But and, that's only till the end of the month, right? So they need to subscribe now.
Yeah, yeah. This deal is for a limited time only. Yeah. So you need to go to the iTunes and subscribe to us and leave a rating and a review while you're there. It really does help us, and we appreciate it. And join our League of Show Sharers. Share it with a friend. That helps us tremendously. And it gets the word out. Maybe it picks us up a couple extra listeners, and it makes it worth our while. We're not getting paid in money, so you could at least pay us by stroking our ego. We'd appreciate it. Yes.
And if you want to throw in a little extra.
Stroking?
Yeah.
I'm married.
Well, you know, Creepy Joe.
Oh. So, no. Creepy Joe's married to Creepy Mrs. Joe.
Oh, no.
Mrs. Creepy Joe?
Yeah.
Where does the creepy go?
In that?
It doesn't
Mrs.
go anywhere.
Joe.
It doesn't go anywhere. I'm just going to. I'm really glad she doesn't listen.
Yeah, that's probably for the best. Yeah. I hope my ex-wife's attorney doesn't listen. So, nah, I don't give a shit.
Is there a statute of limitations?
What do I care?
Yeah. That... Point to the thing I said that's not true. So, so I believe that's it for this week, and we don't know what we're going to do next week. But why is that unusual?
It's no different.
We gave you some
else.
Options. Who knows? I know what we'll do next: a box office report.
Hey!
How about that? So thanks for listening, and until next time, Vernon has to become a migrant hobo.
Let me just step right in. I got things to invent. I'm an innovator, baby, change the world. Fortune 500 before you kiss the girl. I'm a pink, you're a nerd. I'm slick, you're cheesy. Beating you is Apple too easy. I make the product that the artist chooses. And the GUI that Melinda uses. I need to bring up some basic. Why'd you name your company after your blowjobs? You arrogant prick with your secondhand jeans and your turtleneck. I'll drill a hole in the middle of your phony head. With your own little spin of grease ball of death. Can't be, you got given up at birth. I give away your net worth to AIDS research. Combine all your little toys and I still crush that. iPhone, iPad, iPhone, I smack. A man uses the machines you build to sit down and pay his taxes. A man uses the machines I build to listen to the Beatles while he relaxes.
Well, Steve, you steal all the credit for work that other people do. Did your fat beard Wozniak write these raps for you, too?
Ooh, everybody knows Windows bit off Apple.
I tripled the profits on a PC.
All the people with the power to create use an Apple.
And people with jobs use PC.
You know, I bet they made this beat on an Apple.
Nope, Fruity Loops, PC.
You will never, ever catch a virus on an Apple.
Well, you could still afford a doctor if you bought a PC.
Let's talk about doctors. I've seen a few because I got a PC. But it wasn't from you. I built a legacy, son. You can never stop it. Now excuse me while I turn heaven a profit.
Fine, wanna be like that? Die then. The whole world loves you, but you are my friend. I'm alone now with nothing but power and time. And no one on earth who can challenge my mind. I'm a boss, I own DOS. Your future is my design. I'm a god, own Xbox. Now there's no one to stop me, the world is mine.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Sorry, Bill. I'm afraid I can't let you do that. Take a look at your history. Everything you built leads up to me.